In this week's episode of the First Moves podcast, we're talking to Ron Wang, CEO and co-founder of Expert. We'll be discussing her journey from being a PhD student to a researcher to now being the CEO of Expert, where they upcycle eggshell waste into different materials with a lot of use cases. If you'd like to listen how a small team is taking on such a big challenge and such a big industry, this episode is for you, so please give it a listen. Thank you.
Ron, welcome to the show. Could you please introduce yourself and give us a bit of an overview of your career so far?
Sure. Thank you for inviting me. My name is Ron Wang. A lot of Dutch people call me Ron Wang, but I want to prove that I'm the right one. So my career journey, mainly actually I work in the universities. Mm-hmm. So before I came to Netherlands, I first worked in a company of injection molding and of Swiss company. Mm-hmm. And then I worked there only for like about a year. And then there's a phone call came and say, hey, there's a potential opportunity in Netherlands for a PhD research. Do you want to go? Took me like a night that I thought like, okay, that might be the only chance I can go really to abroad. Mm. So actually I took the opportunity and then I came to Netherlands. So my first job at Twente University as a researcher. Mm-hmm. And then after my graduation, after I finished the PhD, I moved to Maastricht University as a kind of a second researcher. Mm-hmm. Then I work a lot of on the, like biomaterials for tissue regeneration, where I realized I do a lot of research. However, how should I serve the patients that, lying in actually the hospital? Mm. So that the moment I realized, hey, what's happening in the world? So that's also the moment I want to, it's kind of inspire me to think of this entrepreneurship. What can we do as a researcher to serve the society? So I decide to, look at this angle. Mm. And there's some conflict of interest in my research and my, interest to go to startup or innovation venture. And then I actually quit my job to start my own startup company.
Yeah, very cool.
So that's my career.
Very cool. And your company is called Expert?
That's true. Expert. Yes. The expert of eggshells.
Yes. Could you maybe introduce how you came to the idea of Expert, also what it does, just to kind of give the listeners a bit of an overview as to what your company entails?
Yeah. So actually, it's not my idea to really start Expert, actually. I had a co-founder. She's actually master student of Maastricht University, and she has this opportunity to join this lesson called entrepreneurship in the Broadland Chemlaw campus. And actually, the teacher, let's say the tutor, recognized the very nice idea of her kind of assignment. So that's actually the starting point of the Expert. But she was student. Eh? She had really hesitating to start, and she feel like, hey, I'm a student. How should I do business? So that the moment, actually, we met each other on the bus, and then she talked about that, and then I felt like, oh, that's actually also what I want to do. To use my knowledge to help society. So that's actually the joint moment that I, co-found company with my co-founder. And for experts, we of course we want to do circular economy to mm-hmm. use knowledge to help upcycling eggshell as by waste from the egg egg companies and egg processing companies who normally have egg liquid as a product, but then eggshell for them is just waste. Mm. Yeah, so that's actually the starting point. Yeah,
very fair. And maybe I'm curious about the egg industry because sourcing eggshells from private individuals would be a mess. So you have to go, like you said, through these bigger organizations.
Right.
How did you guys kind of find this gap that you could then work with these kind of companies to do what Expert does, which we'll get more onto later? But how did you enter that industry and even find your footing there in the first place?
That's also not by our intention. So the another factor that we started a company also because there's a guy who's doing an egg business already. Mm-hmm. So he knows in this industry there's a problem, for instance, eggshells. But also one of his clients, he has a lot of the eggshell membrane proteins in the stock. And he don't know how to use these materials. And when he heard our idea that we want to use eggshell membrane proteins for skincare applications, he found, wow, that's the, you know, click.
Yeah.
That's the fit of that problem. And so that's actually why we already got this egg company, you know, in the beginning of our business. Yeah. So a bit of luck, I would say, or destiny, you know. It's not really like, hey, we are sourcing an eggshell, you know, supply. But actually, there's a company that are looking for solutions. Yeah, so that's the click.
So for these eggshells then, because they're a waste of these companies then, where you get them from, do you have to pay for them? Or is it just like, because it's already waste for these companies, they kind of just give them to you?
So it depends which type of companies. So for the bigger egg breaker companies, they actually have installed certain treatment process, which they preheat or sterilize eggshells, and then they sell to feed industry. So these type of eggshells is a kind of high quality, and which you have to pay actually. Not that high value, but still you have to pay. However, there's also medium or small size of egg companies. So they have not that significant amount. However, for them, they don't want to invest in this pre-treatment, you know? And then they have to actually pay the municipality to take away this waste. So for them, it's a loss. So it depends what type of companies are supplying this eggshells.
Yeah, so the small ones, they really want to get rid of it, kind of. So they're like, take it, please.
Yeah. But also because they don't have standard treatments, so means the quality of eggshells is also not really stable.
Mm-hmm.
So in this sense, we have to be careful, you know, when we're sourcing from the small companies. But I think in the future, we will be able to do that.
And so we know that you work with eggshells, and now we kind of know where you get them. What do you actually do with them? So you're working with the membrane proteins, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But we're curious, like, do you remove them from the eggshells? Then do you process them in certain ways? And then with what goal? You said circular economy.
Mm-hmm.
And you said skincare products, but what kind of applications can we see with kind of reprocessing and upcycling this waste?
Right, yeah. So as I said, that normal eggshells from this egg company, they directly serve feed industry. So let's consider this as a standard, you know, like treatment of eggshells. So we want to do upcycling, so means added value from us.
Yeah.
So what we do is we use the sourcing of the eggshells, and then we separate the membrane proteins from the eggshells.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have two pure kind of raw materials. So for the proteins, we have also two type of lines. One is just the raw egg membrane proteins, which we can use for actually healthy supplements, ingredients. So for instance, you can use for for cartilage, pain relief. This is more like food supplements. Or you can do another process, which you hydrolyze the membrane proteins, make them soluble in water, which you can use for skincare applications. So that's from the proteins perspective. However, from the eggshells perspective, the eggshells actually contains calcium carbonate, which is the most used mineral in all industries. So of course, you can also replace the mining-sourced calcium carbonate. So for instance, now we have researched in as a plastic fillers. So we call this biofillers because it's coming from bio-based materials. And also we use for, like flooring. You can also add mineral in the flooring, like PVC flooring.
Mm-hmm.
Also we have research on the sunscreen, the microplastic replacement or the, you know, UV blocking reagent.
Yeah.
So these are actually a lot of applications we are still on the development. I can say there are many applications for these two streams. Yeah.
So when you try to do this biofiller
stuff,
is it just grinding up the eggshells, or do you add other stuff to it to end up getting the final product?
So in this case, we separate the proteins from eggshells. So we have the pure eggshells, and then we do the grinding indeed. To different particle size, which you use for different, like purposes. Some application you need very fine particle size, but some they just need like, okay, a little bit bigger, it's okay. But depends also on the needs. If you really want specific properties, then you have to do, for instance, coding, you know, to make it even better or easier to use. So that could be potentially possibilities. But for now, we only do separation and then grinding, and then also do the research on the performance of these particles in the new applications. Yeah.
Right. So if am I getting out of context correctly that essentially eggshells have a huge resource base in terms of what it can be used for?
Right.
There's so many applications.
Mm-hmm.
Then is it now kind of as a business finding the right channels through which you can sell these resources and seeing all the different applications that play into it and basically aligning it with market needs to kind of get in front of the more traditional methods, like you said, instead of using mined calcium carbonate, instead using eggshells and making sure that you guys can kind of get into the market this way.
Yeah. Because this market is pretty mature, actually, you know, because mining calcium carbonate is what a used popular, you know, mineral. To really take some shares from this market is really challenging. Also because our price is not that, you know, like comparable, let's say, than this traditional mineral.
Yep.
So it's really hard to find actually the, the targets, clients, and also the channel, how to reach them. But we do have a few already clients that are interested to use bio-based materials and also regard the bio-waste, recycle, and circular, sustainable. So I do see the trend from the society. Actually, they prefer to use this waste stream instead of doing the mining.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you say the price difference, is it then more expensive than traditional mining or less expensive?
It's unfortunately more expensive.
Okay.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah, also because this is not really yet a mature process, you know? Mm-hmm. So we still need a lot of investment in development to build up this process to get certification to be used in specific applications. So for now, it's still high, but we do see if a lot of people recognize these materials and also more businesses are making this material ready, I think the price one day can also go down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with economies of scale, the price is going to go down.
Yeah.
Sure.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's a new innovative way of extracting the same resource. So, of course, it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah.
But I think, indeed, if you go to higher end customers or customers who really value sustainability, they're willing to pay the premium. You can reinvest that into better processing.
Yeah.
And then
take the cost down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly our strategy.
Yeah. And so what kind of strategies have you then applied in the past to try and find that alignment? I think Amy, one of your colleagues, gave the example of skincare. You also mentioned it before, but with these masks.
Right.
So how did that work out and what kind of other approaches are you taking as well?
There's this really good failure example. So actually, in the beginning, I said the incorporation of expert is because we know these membrane proteins and they are looking for solutions. Mm-hmm. So we said, okay, now we provide a solution. So we think in a cosmetic field, for instance, the facial mask is very popular in China. Mm-hmm. We said, okay, now I see in Netherlands, the consumers start to look at this product as well. So we say, oh, this is booming, you know, market. So we target the facial mask as our first product. And we want to make the best quality of facial mask and then sell in Netherlands. So after almost 3 years, I finally, you know, created my formulation and then I also produced the first pilot production. I feel like, hey, now everything ready. Let's go to the market. Everyone will, you know, fight for our facial masks. Which after like 2 months, I think, I'm like, hey, where should I sell it? So we launched our webshop. So we thought like it would be, wow, you know, just launch, everybody order.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, first month, I think it's still okay. But afterwards, it's just like cooling down.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that easy. So we realized, hey, our market strategy is not ready, you know. So before we make the product. So that moment I realized, don't make product before you know where to sell or what your market strategy, you know?
Yep.
Still, I still have a half of the production in my basement. So
how many pieces
could be the call for action for the help.
Yeah, maybe your audience can get some of these, or we can find someone to sell them for you.
Yes, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. This is really like, I really believe the quality or everything is the best,
yeah.
But we just don't have good strategy at that moment, you know,
yeah.
When we produce the product.
Of yeah. course. And I think something that Sebastian and I often talk about as well is that B2C is very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because every customer, yeah, they'll take quite some money to acquire still, and then the purchase value that they have is quite small in terms
right.
of their impact on your revenue. So you have to have so many of them to actually have a solid business model. So B2B is, at least for us, something that we always find quite lucrative.
Yes, that's yeah. also, I think after this case, we realized, we should look back our business model. No?
Mm.
Like, is B2C or B2B? And so that's actually the moment we switch our strategy, you know?
Right.
To B2B.
Yeah. Yeah, understandable, for sure.
And then, talking about these strategic switches,
mm-hmm.
how was the switch from being a researcher then going into being a CEO all of a sudden? Because you're the CEO of Expert, so that's a completely different role
right.
than being a researcher. So how was that switch and how did that impact you?
You know, I was not planned to be a CEO, let's say. So in the beginning, as I said, Expert is still kind of innovative type of startup. Mm-hmm. So we use also a lot of innovative grants to support our R&D development. So that's also, I recognize my strengths that I can, you know, have new ideas how to use these unique materials. But actually, during this first production of the facial masks and the cosmetic product, I realized, hey, I'm not capable yet to be more like CEO or even a sales or commercial person. So I actually try to hire kind of CEO for half a year. But then I also realized it's not the best way.
No.
So maybe I recognize if you are the founder and you know the company the best and it's also kind of innovative type of company, yeah, maybe for current state, you are still the best candidate for CEO.
Yeah.
I think I'm still kind of learning all the time to be a real CEO, but still I wouldn't say I'm the, you know, right CEO, but just I'm the CEO for current stage.
Mm.
Yeah. But a lot of mind switch is learned by doing, actually.
And I think so too, also from when we started as well, our companies, there's always space to learning and it's never like you're the right fit immediately for it. But what you say with this, you are the founder and you do know the company the best.
Right.
So right now, that position is the best for you to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly what I want to say. It's just the current stage, the moment that I'm still the best.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for also the senior CEO actually to
right.
bring Expert to the next level.
Yeah. Understandable. Sure. Yeah, but I think that's very relatable. I think whenever you're starting also, I think when you know the business the best and you kind of have an idea of a direction that you want to bring it in because that's where you see the potential, then I think for me, learning is honestly the reason why I enjoy this kind of work is because you're consistently stretching yourself. And it's annoying because you always feel like you're playing catch up, at least I do, because I'm always shooting, okay, I did this, now something bigger or the next thing or growing, etc.
Right.
So you're always trying to close that gap between who you should be in the moment as CEO or as leader and who you are. I can relate to that feeling, but indeed in the moment you're probably still the best person. And I mean, yeah, I think it's maybe you'll learn and grow to the point where you will still be the best person. Who knows?
We'll see.
Yes. Yeah, indeed.
So when we talk about these production methods of grinding up the membrane and separating them. How reliant are you guys on IP, and do you actually have IP on these processes of separating them?
Yeah, we were thinking of filing IP to separate these two. But I also realized if you're filing a patent, you also kind of release your way of doing.
Yes.
So if we plan to do our own production, then it's not necessarily to file a patent for this specific process. So that's also why for now we did not really file the patent, but we do want to do our first pilot production in-house. That that also recently we got this grant that we can support this action. So that's why. But we do want to file patents regardless of applications. So for instance, we use this biofiller in plastics, in different plastics, formulation-wise, and also the properties. So these are the future kind of patents we're going to file.
Right. It's actually a quite smart strategy. That's something that not a lot of people actually think about when they're going for it. They just want to have the patent immediately. But if you actually do it in-house, there's no one who sees the process. Now, if someone else had to do it for you guys, then obviously then you would have to file the patent because there's a chance that it leaks. But if you do it in-house, there's no reason for it. That's
And then indeed, patenting the way that you align with the market and the products that you have, then that is smart because then you can sell that to more people or you can license it.
Indeed. That's also
Yeah, so that's a good way to monetize. Indeed. And then, I mean, when you read about Expert and the way that it's framed, it's also, obviously, also what we discussed about earlier, it's very sustainable, like, it's very much driven towards sustainability. Mm-hmm. Where does this motivation come from?
Yeah, I think it's kind of my personal like mission-wise, I actually my professional is more in a healthcare, like doing research in a tissue regeneration. But my hobby or my other kind of personal value is in circular economy. I want to help, you know, the society in a more circular. So that's actually my personal value. So that's my driven.
Yeah, understandable. And translating that into a business is where at least it's interesting and it's fun because you can. You can live those values.
Right. I think that also the capacity that I can contribute, that's also another factor. If I'm not capable of doing that, then I also feel like, okay, it's just a dream, you know. Maybe I can support, but I would not do myself. But since I have this also capacity, and also there's everything like, in Chinese we have this saying like, everything is come together, you know. Yep. So then you have the best momentum that you want to start or you want to do it.
Yes,
I think that moment, I have that momentum.
So we discussed the production processes of separating all of these membranes from the eggshells. Mm-hmm. How big of a role does technology and technological advancements play for you guys to become more sustainable or grow the company sustainably?
The technology level. There's a different way of separating, of course. There are also not only us playing in this field. There are also different players in different countries, in US, in Spain, France. And then we do see a different way, like technology-wise, of separating. So I think the aim is the same. So we all want to, you know, upcycling in a way that we can maximum the protein value, but also eggshells. I can say it's just different level of technology, but the goal is the same.
Everyone wants to be the most efficient one in doing so.
Yeah, of course, everybody wants to. They all claim, hey, we have the best separation technology that we can separate. Sustainability, I think I get your question regards of maybe energy saving or more efficient in a way of separating. So... No, we did not really look at from that angle. We only look at if we can effectively separate these two, which we can get also approval regards of, you know, quality certification. Energy analysis not yet done because we still are planning to build this pilot production.
Still the pre-stages of that big pilot testing.
We still have to do the engineering and then the process optimization. And then after that, I think I can deliver a better overview.
And how are you guys sustaining yourself right now? Is it just on grants? Or have you gotten investments already? Or are you already doing some small-scale sales, like with the face masks?
We have kind of a few sort resources, mainly from actually innovative grants, subsidies, and a local governmental support from Leo, for instance. And then we have small sales, very small, also because it's hard to reach a large client. And also we just started this year actually for the sale, the real sale.
Okay.
The facial mask is really not for the revenue.
It was for the lesson.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. For lesson. Yeah. And also for investment, we are raising also the seed fund for the together with the pilot production. So that's the coming focus as well. Yeah.
And how are you guys wanting to raise this? Are you talking to angel investors, or are you talking to parties like the Leof, or how are you guys trying this?
Yeah. We have, for instance, this innovative subsidy. They can cover a certain percentage. And then we also ask Leof if they like to cover another, you know, part of it.
Yeah.
And then we also need a VCs actually to cover the remaining part of the funding.
Yeah.
I think now we have 75, let's say, kind of secured, but then we still need actually VC, venture capital, to really step in on board.
Yeah.
And is that your main responsibility within Expert right now to get that? Yeah.
Yes, I feel like I'm now the funding raiser person rather than CEOs.
Yes.
Because we don't really have like too many business oriented people on board, so I have to do also this part of work.
But you know, that's also what they say in the beginning in a startup, that the CEO's job is solely to get funding. It's the only thing you do,
and essentially almost everything else.
Yes,
a lot of the time.
Yes, like, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I do a lot of R&D, so I create a lot of applications. Mm. So that's also my strength. I can easily, you know, like resonate. Oh, we can use XGAOS to replace this part in this product. And on top of that, raising money is another major job for me.
Nice.
And how do you feel about wearing those different hats? Because I always use the hat analogy that you're the CEO, so you take on the funding hat and you take it off, and then comes the R&D hat, and then comes to talking to the personnel hat.
I always have a lot of hats, so I don't have time to take off. I think it's okay. Yes, maybe my personality. I'm good at talking to people, or you know, like just have a good conversations. So I can also share, hey, what are my mission or my motivation to do this? So I think it's also easily resonate with the people who I talk to. And also for different roles, I think, still I'm the one knows the most. Mm. Yeah, so could be the reason.
And are you doing research at labs from the University of Maastricht currently?
In the early phase, we did.
Okay.
In the early stage, so they actually support us with free access at that time for a year.
Yeah.
So we developed this product for the cosmetic applications.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually support from the bio-based, what's this called, Army BM department. And now we work with a lot with the public facility in the Broadland Chemlaw campus.
Yeah.
It's called CHIL.
So
we use their platform to develop R&D and also work with students.
How much time is currently going into the lab, and how much of your personal time are you spending
for me? Actually, for now, I mainly use supervision role instead of doing experiment myself.
Yeah.
Also because it's not really our lab, so I don't really have access to do things. But I think in the coming time, we will also set up our own lab, which actually I still like doing, you know, the practical try and test myself.
Yep.
So I think in the future, I will also devote 20% of my time, I think.
Yeah.
Another head.
Nice. And yeah, we had Anirudh, another guest who was also at the CHIL labs with Astrarium. The ones using genetically modified bacteria to desalinate water.
Okay.
I think he was in the same labs as well, also at the Chemlaw campus.
They're in the biological labs.
Yes,
they are. In more materials lab.
Yes, yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But I do know them well.
Yeah, we visited, and it was very cool to see
the labs. Also visited.
Yeah. As two business students.
Yeah, it's a very cool location.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, the Chemlaw campus is beautiful.
We
actually spin out kind of from there because we joined this incubator program and then they are from the Broadland Chemlaw campus.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so far, I think something that also popped up when we were looking at Expert and something that's coming up in the conversation is the very nice like constellation of partners that Expert has. So you have the Leof, you have the Interreg with not only Flanders Netherlands, but also the Maas-Rhine region. You have, you're being funded by the European Union. You have the Brightlands connection, the Mid-Zuid connection, the Zuid Applied University connection, the Maastricht University connection, and the circular rubber platform as well. So just a huge list of very interesting partners.
Oh. I think it's not that many.
No, not enough yet.
Cooperated in the year of 2017.
Right, okay. So 7 years.
End of the year.
Yeah.
And of course, in the beginning, we don't have any access. We just have this idea. Okay, let's use the proteins for cosmetics. That's really just idea. We don't have any lab or validation to to realize, you know? Yeah. And then that took us kind of 2-3 years to realize the first product.
Yeah.
And then slowly, we also work like a bit part time.
Right.
So then the development a little bit slow.
Yeah.
I think from last year to this year, and then is it a bit rapid.
Yeah. I was curious then in like what capacity these partners have supported Expert to where it is today, and maybe the role they play in doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the most really I appreciate is Leof. So also because in the first year, I think, so we only have this idea, and then they start already to support us with this proof of principle subsidy, which really helped us a lot to kick off, you know. And then slowly we get actually more subsidy from them, and also the business developer from Leof, and they also introduce us to different network, you know, different experts, which helped us a lot, really. And slowly they also say, hey, Interreg, you know, different programs. So mainly, I think a lot of these partners was introduced by Leof. Yeah, so I really, I like to promote to, you know, all the audience, if you want to do entrepreneurship, try to get help from Leof. Mm. Yeah. Of course, other platforms, we also can reach via certain events, go out and then join these events. Yeah. So it's also a good opportunity to connect with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair. And I think you indeed just need a few people who are really in your corner.
Right.
And then you can go from there because they'll connect you to the next people.
Yeah, and then
you can really build. But was it also then primarily with these list of partners that it was like financial or resource-based backing that you got from them? Or were there also other forms of support that you got from them?
I think not only financials from these guys. Of course, financial is very important. That's also important role to let us survive till now. But also other support regards of potential clients, potential applications.
Mm.
So that also part of the support, I feel like quite important. Yeah.
And then do you have any recommendations? Because for us, this is a very impressive list. You said it's not big enough, but for us, this is an impressive list.
Oh yeah.
Do you have any recommendations for fellow entrepreneurs who want to build up these kinds of partnerships?
Join the events.
Yeah.
I feel like in Netherlands there's so many events organized. Although the country is compact.
Yeah.
But still, they organize so many events. For me, I just like to go and join and meet people and get to know each other. And also get your kind of same-minded people on board.
Mm.
I think I also recently worked with a few senior people. They already have their kind of network, which they also bring, you know, to us. So it's really networking.
Yeah.
Always the key.
And I think that's also one of those really important roles as a CEO is
being
able to go out there and say, hey, here we are. This is our company.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guys help us?
Right.
And just going into the conversations and not being scared of getting that conversation with people.
Mm. Mm. As a entrepreneur or CEO, you are not scared.
Yeah.
No.
You have to do it.
Maybe you are, but you should act in despite of the fear anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. At least act if I'm
exactly.
not scared.
Yes, act. Yes.
But I remember another thing I also now realize is quite important. So I joined this business club that's also organized via this Broadland Camelot campus, all the campuses from the Limburg region. So which also helped me a lot with different entrepreneurs in the region, you know. Mm. And then they also organize different events, like I think 4 times per year, which I also feel like it's quite important for me as a foreigner, you know, to know the local network.
Yeah.
So that's another thing, I think.
Yeah.
Be part of the community.
Yeah. Have certain collaborations come from this between you and other founders and things like this, that where you guys maybe develop a project together or a product together, or you find other solutions to the things you're facing?
I think not yet with the collaboration projects, but I do find a few people who are already senior or serious entrepreneurs, which they are liking. They like to help me, so they give advice or they're being an advisor.
Yeah.
So that I realize, oh, it pay off with my business club fee. So yeah. I think it still worth it. Yeah.
You've now been with Expert for 7 years. You said you incorporated around 7 years ago. What is the proudest moment or achievement that you guys have done so far with Expert for you?
Yeah, I think if I look back, the moment I'm really happy or proud is finally I have clear branding of Expert. So in the beginning, you know, because lack of money, so I design everything myself. I create logo, I create website, I try to make everything clear. However, of course, I'm not trained as a designer. And then I hired a professional designer to look at our business case, to look at our mission. And then I think actually this year, only this year, we finally have our own brand, which we can clearly show, hey, we are doing this circular and this is the mission we want to deliver. And to make it everybody, you know, clear. So that I feel like, finally, it's so nice. So that's the moment I feel very proud.
I mean, it looks very cool.
It does look
If good. You go to the website, it does look very nice. So yeah. If you haven't yet, go have a look. Yes. Oh, very good. Yeah, I think that's one of the hats that I was wearing a lot as CEO as well, was website builder.
Oh. I learned from YouTuber, actually.
Yes, same. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't build websites. I had to hire someone for that. I cannot.
Yeah, but the concept of the design is from the professional designer. Right. But yeah. To realize, yeah? Then, then you, otherwise, you have to hire in-house a designer.
Yeah.
But you know, as a tech company or innovative company, why you need a designer?
So. Yeah, understandable. Then what about the future in maybe circular economy and then in the food industry? What are exciting things for you that you hope to see be realized?
I think especially in Netherlands or in Europe, I do see like the trend in bio-based materials, use more circular, you know, materials.
Yeah.
So which I think we are still in the right track.
Yeah.
But also for me, for experts, we want to work with more byproduct from food or agriculture sourcing. So that's also, I think for us, is a coming kind of goal to look at this direction, to work with more byproduct from agriculture. Food industry.
Right.
Yeah.
So also outside of eggshells.
Right. Yeah. I think we are not limited to only eggshells. Mm. That's the starting point, I would say. So if this, you know, if this business model is mature, and then we can actually principle move to another byproduct, you know, from other resources. So it could be similar.
Yeah. Mm. It's also a great excuse to get back into the lab for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yes,
to explore those things. Must be fun as well to do that then.
We already talked to one of the winemakers, so which they also have a lot of byproduct from the wine, the fruit. And then we also think of how to, you know, collaborate, how to generate a new product which fits, you know, in certain applications.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So keeping that in mind, what is then next for you, an expert, in the next coming years?
Sales.
Yes.
I mean, after, you know, 7-8 years to be more sustainable from business perspective, you do need a cash in, revenue to support yourself. You can't just get all the subsidies all the time. So now we develop a kind of mature business model that we supply, you know, the pure eggshell, pure proteins to different industry. And then I think for now we want to promote the sales. to really realize the business. So I would say for the coming time, that's the main task. And also, of course, innovation is also our core. So we will still look at applications, for instance, in new fields, in a tile, in a clay field, in a stone paper, in the paper industry. So these are all still new applications we're going to realize in the coming year. Yeah.
Then is there anything that you maybe think that either Sebastian and I or our listeners could help expert with? Maybe face masks?
For sure. Yeah, actually, I'm thinking of from different angle. For instance, if there are egg breaking owners or egg industry owners who are listening, I would call for action to think of working together with the expert, not only because we can save their eggshells with high value, but also to support impact-driven, mission-driven, or circular-driven startups. So I talked to different egg companies, and they were only looking at their own value, you know, like, oh, you do something for my eggshells? Okay. How much I can get, you know, like they really already think of how, you know, much they can get from our kind of innovations.
Yeah.
But we as a company, we don't have other revenue. We only work with eggshells. We need to also sustain ourselves first, you know. So don't already look at the profit for your own, you know. Look at also the whole value chain, you know, or yeah. Other parties. So that's for the audience if there are egg industry owners. And for, I think, investors also. A lot of investors said, oh, you don't have sales. Yeah, then they are, of course, we are risky if we don't have sales. Mm. But to crack this industry, to really ask them to switch from their traditional cheap materials to a high-cost new materials, which might change their process, is a big change. Mm. So for them, it's hard to accept, like, hey, next day, you know, they order. So it's also a bit difficult to really sell a product in a short time. So for investors who really look at, you know, like, hey, you need to bring the sales to be able for them to invest. That's also a bit challenging, I think, for now.
Yeah.
In regards of clients, I think, if there are any party who are interested in this sustainable type of mineral, like calcium carbonate, think of also, in the early phase, you need to give a bit more, you know, in this paying a bit more on these resources, because it's a new, still new. I mean, actually, it's not new materials, but to use in the industry, I mean, we deliver our efforts. I want them also to appreciate these efforts,
yeah,
to deliver a little bit more, you know, price for us to keep doing this. Otherwise, we cannot survive. Mm. So, different parties, I would say, to support us. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the main thing is that if we want to make a change to a world that can actually be sustained, where people and planet can live in harmony,
right,
it's going to come at a little bit of a cost in the short term.
Yeah.
And to make it more efficient. But once we have that, they're the only models that actually can survive in the long run.
Yeah.
So it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the money and you are a higher end producer of something else that would use these materials, why the hell not?
Right.
Yeah.
I think also from us, we want to educate also the society or the industry parties to look at these materials and then realize, hey, there's actually abundance of this, you know, replaceable type of materials. And then to let other people who want to do business to also take along. Then at that moment, everybody's looking at it eggshells. Then actually for me, I don't really mind that I go to the nests. Buy product that do something new. So my personal kind of vision is I more educate this, you know, the society, the business, and then do more things in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think leverage awareness.
Right. Yeah, the awareness, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have a closing tradition on this podcast. And we asked you to bring an object that is of personal and significance. So what did you bring for us? Could you maybe tell the story behind it?
I bring a different pills. Yeah. The story is actually came from my mom. She's not educated as a farmer. So she has some pain with her joints. Mm-hmm. And then she always felt like, oh, so annoying. And she wants to solve these problems. And then she always tried to find these, you know, the like mystery solutions that from someone that said, oh, you know what? You eat one pill, you will reduce all the pains, you know? So she wants to trust this type of claims or solutions, which I told her many times, like, no, I did research on this joint pain, you know? So I know it cannot be fixed by just eating a pill or something. Mm. But she doesn't believe me. She just believed the guy who are selling these non-labeled pills. So I really felt like sometimes confusing, like why as, you know, her daughter or as a PhD or doctor, I told her, hey, don't trust these people, but that she still want to trust. So slowly I realized maybe because the knowledge gap between my mom and me, you know, so I tried to convince her with my kind of scientific background, or I maybe explain to her too scientific. And she don't want to believe me. So I feel like this actually give me the feeling when I work with egg farmers or egg, you know, like breaking companies. So they are also a bit like, they look at these materials and like, oh, this is eggshells. Maybe I use this for chicken feet. But actually from scientific perspective, there are many, many ways that you can use these materials. Mm. But maybe scientists, they don't see these ways or something in a certain way. So I do feel there's a knowledge gap between, you know, like a researcher or, yeah, business or the egg, you know, farmers. Mm. Mm. It's like my mom and me and my mom, I feel like there's something missing in between. So which really give me a feeling, hey, I want to stay in this business, even though it's quite difficult sometimes, very challenging. But still, I feel like I still want to do this because I want to bridge this gap with my knowledge, limited business experience, but still it hang me there, you know? Mm. So that's maybe I found the connections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a big thing as well, where something that a mentor of Sebastian and I, Eric Yost, he says that irritation leads to innovation and you're irritated by this knowledge gap.
Right.
And that's now what you want to close.
Yeah, so, yeah. I really try to talk to different egg owners and I mean the egg business owners. So when I talk to them, when I explain to them, they were like, really? You can use this for skincare? Really? It's a waste. How can you do this for, you know, like skincare? So they really found this so, you know, like difficult. Mm. So that's, I feel like, hey, there is some gap in between. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Well, building bridges.
Hopefully yes. We can address this gap.
Yes. Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Well, I think you're in a great position to do so as someone with the scientific knowledge, but also is out there doing it with your own company.
Yeah.
That's kind of the perfect place to be and to do so.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
Working on it for sure.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you very much for listening to that episode of First Moves. If you want to connect with our guests personally, make sure to follow us on LinkedIn at First Moves. We also have an Instagram called First Moves Podcast. And lastly, if you could take a moment to leave a review, it helps us make the show better for you, but also helps us get even better and more insightful guests over the long run. Thank you very much and have a great day.